Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And you are listening to episode 60.
The big 6-0.
Another decade in the books.
Another milestone.
Another 10 fingers down. Where will we end, Vince? You think we can hit 70?
I have a funny feeling that we will because we're like a lot of the way there already.
Yeah.
In terms of scheduling.
To be fair.
Great episode.
Yeah, great episode. Talking to the good homie, Chris McAllister of Site Shift. He has a podcast. He has a bit of a... Well, he has a company, I mean, that is essentially... We get into the subtleties of it because it's sort of nebulous, but it's a consultancy. He talks to creative leaders. He talks to creatives and essentially kind of unblocks them. It seems like he really gets you out of your own way and helps you do great work.
Absolutely. To his own credit, he's an author and a speaker. And this unblocking was something that came up a lot in the episode because we were talking about a concept that we collectively called creative feng shui. And that was both arranging your external inputs and your internal frame of mind and way of thinking in a way that allowed you to be the most creative version of yourself. And it was a interesting idea fraught with philosophical discussions. We went down a lot of avenues. One of the most exploratory episodes we've had in a while. And a really fun one.
Dude, we got weird.
We did, a little bit.
I respected that quite a bit. I will say, part of my personal creative feng shui has to do with how things are organized and how they work together. And a big part of that, as I think you know, is Sanebox for me, especially in my email world. I think the feng shui is so important in email. I think people get really caught up in waste time there. And to me, it's just a fantastic tool. It essentially simplifies my inbox, gets a lot of junk out of there, and makes it very actionable and trainable. So thank you to Sanebox for sponsoring this episode. Go check it out. You get a free trial. If you use the code or if you go to the particular URL, you're going to get a little bit of a discount. And that's at sanebox.com/AD/10KHRS. That's sanebox.com/ad/10KHRS. Thank you, Sanebox.
Thank you so much for your support and your sponsorship. And thank you, Chris McAllister, for what turned out to be a great episode. I'm sure you guys will like it because thank you, listeners. As always, episode 60, Creative Feng Shui.
Listen, my only defense against well-spoken fellas like yourselves is just like, be a dick. I just go down to the lowest common denominator. I'm standing on the edge, looking down into the abyss. I'm at the precipice.
Call of the void.
It's sort of beautiful. There's something pretty about it. You know, I think some people are fearful of that cliff, but I see potential, Vince.
Well said, man.
Thank you. I wrote that like 3 weeks ago. I've been refining it. I've just been waiting to audition it for you.
Originally cast on a foggy bathroom mirror, right?
Yeah, that was me. Vince, I'm kind of curious. So I've been wondering, I just have this, you know, I'm a naturally curious person, right?
Yes, curiosity drives you, my friend.
It does. And something in particular that I've been wondering about is, what are you putting your time into? Like Vince, what are you working on?
Grant, I'm so glad that you asked. I just got back from a relaxing weekend, so I actually haven't been working on anything for a couple days. But now I'm back at it, back at the office, busy with a few projects, one for our good friends over in New York at Planet Data. They're an interesting software company. Beyond that, I'm working on a freelance project with a lovely lady from out west. She's coming back to her family farm in the Midwest, in Minneapolis, and we're going to be doing some kind of branding work on a new website. And so it's good to be on that freelance game again. I always enjoy having projects going on outside of the office.
Freelance grind.
That freelance grind. So that'll be fun. Grant, can you do me the distinct honor of returning the favor and telling me what you've been putting your time into recently?
You know what, Vince? I'd love to. A lot of musically inspired things recently. Finishing up an edit for the Spirit of Orlando music video. It's looking pretty cool. I'm like super happy with it.
Can't wait to see it, man.
Two days ago, I was shooting for Soundset, which was cool. It was a cool thing. Soundset's like a music festival here, sort of hip hop. It's like, like Atmosphere, if you're familiar with them. But yeah, just shot a bunch of photos for that and they turned out really good. So I'm like happy.
Excellent, man. You're a man of many disciplines.
And the thing is, I was recently putting some time into, and I should say that music video was technically produced by a little platform called Death to the Stock Photo, friend of the show, episode, I want to say like 42.
I think 44.
Okay. But those guys actually, they were in Minneapolis last week, which was amazing. Such an awesome time. And I will be seeing them next week in LA, which I'm super excited about. But they turned me on to this particular fella who I'm so pumped to have on the show. It's like, you know, I'm just saying, we get some of these guests and it's like, you know, he's going through the motions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Insult our former guests. All
right. We get it. Yeah. You're smart. But this guy, he seems incredibly genuine, and I will say the Death to the Stock people, I can include Adam Lehman in that group. We should show notes him. I think he would appreciate that. But they could not speak highly enough about Mr. Chris McAllister.
Beaming about this guy.
Who is our guest today. Founder of Sightshift, a man of somewhat indescribable talents, but if I was to actually pitch him, not pitch him, but, you know, explain him to someone, I would say he's a bit of a creative Sherpa.
Yes, he is a consultant, an author, a speaker, general creative wise man, and he is gracious enough to join us. Chris McAllister, thank you so much.
Vinny, can I do it this week?
Yes, please.
Chris.
Yes.
What are you putting your time into? What are you working on?
What am I working on? Putting time into working on a manuscript, book, and
that a little sexist.
Oh yeah, it is. But you know what? I can't help that I'm that way, so I'm just leaning into it and going with it.
Yeah, okay. I just nice. Leaning in. Why not a wool manuscript? All right, we're starting off on a low note. Sorry.
No, I get it on mistakes that we make, but we don't always learn from, and it's how to unblock that creativity, that approach to life. And then just working with people, doing stuff like this, having conversations with people, helping them figure out who they are. Like, seriously, today I was looking out a window going, I can't believe I get to do this work with people, talking to somebody in New Zealand who I just wanted to listen to them talk the whole time because their accent was so cool and realized that I need new life goals.
Dude, we've fallen prey to the accents, especially on the podcast. Like, we just don't say a word the entire podcast. We have somebody from the UK, from Australia. I think, have we had any New Zealanders? No, I don't think we have.
I don't think so.
But we just sit here and just gush.
We fanboy pretty hard over the good accent. And we're fanboying hard over you, man. It's great to have you. And we've been excited about this episode for a while, so thanks.
Dude, hey, you guys gave me the most creative way I could ever explain what I do, and I'm going to steal that and use it like crazy. Yeah. The Sherpa.
Yeah, no worries. It's really gonna screw up your bios when you have to credit us with full copyright.
But. Yeah, throw that TM in there. We're required to be named individually and collectively.
Yeah, and a link to a photo of us if you could.
Heck yeah,
man, cool. Welcome to the show. We're so pumped to have you.
Glad to be here,
Vinny. I'm wondering, could you maybe tell us what we're talking about this week?
Yes, and I'm glad that our guest Chris was kind enough to say that it's a creative way to describe himself, because it's more important than we think to bring a creative lens to kind of all the things that we do, even something as simple as introducing ourselves.
Yeah.
And I mean, by design, that's a segue into
don't acknowledge it. Just say it, man.
Come on. You showed the underwear.
I was going to, but then I had to. I just had to call it out.
You had it, man. You had it. You were good, and I could just feel you grinning, and then just going.
I couldn't.
It's a segue.
I know. I couldn't resist. Well, what we're talking about this week is kind of bringing a creative lens not only to our work but to our lives and to everything we do, and to stay creative constantly in something we're calling creative feng shui. How to arrange our life and our way of thinking in such a way that keeps us creative. And we think our guest has spoken a lot on this, both directly and indirectly, in his time, and we're excited to get his opinions and his reflections on it. So, Chris, do you kind of just want to kick us off with maybe starting it by framing it through what you do and kind of your philosophy on creativity in general?
Yeah, yeah. So we work one-on-one with people and we work with organizations where I come in and speak, and then we create resources just to help people really figure out who they are and how that's separate from what they do in their relationships, to understand that so that they can unblock and rearrange parts of their lives to relax their way into their brilliance. So much of the content that's out there is a lot about like striving and hype. And nobody can strive or hype their way into their creative brilliance, to how to organize their life, to how to solve problems that they've let linger maybe for decades. You're going to relax your way into that. So for me, it's about how to unblock the flow that's already there. And most people have learned that in a category of their life, but they haven't connected the bridges to other categories. And so they've got some stuff to unlearn that they just picked up along the way. And I learned it the hard way for myself, because I faced this space where I had I was a third owner of a real estate development corporation, and we broke ground right as the real estate market really started to crash. I'm on the hook for, after it all settled, six zeros. Oh, and dude, it was crazy town. I'm facing a reality where everything that was successful just went south and black. My wife sells her engagement ring so the kids could have Christmas. I opened up my pantry. I literally couldn't fix a bowl of Cheerios, or the kids wouldn't have had one the next day. I remember, this is before third wave coffee was huge. I'm at McDonald's just trying to get a quick cup of coffee, and I didn't have the freaking money. The lady feels bad for me and pushes like 47 coupons across the counter to me.
Jeez, man.
Dude, I mean, I have like 30 freaking stories about all this, but the lowest, I'm sitting on our deck. We had just gotten back from an amazing summer evening at some friends at a friend's house, and there was an eviction notice on our door. And I thought I had a deal worked out with the CEO, because we had to rent because of the real estate development that went south. And his accounting department kicked out this thing, not knowing about our deal. And I'm like, what kind of person, human being, man, provider, husband am I if I can't take care of my family?
Homie. Oh, that's hitting me right in the feels. That's wow. Are you familiar with Josh Long at all? He was like, he was our very first guest.
Okay.
And he was a big inspiration for starting the podcast. But I know his like genesis story, not actual genesis, but like his like the inflection point where he started to really do things he was passionate about, and like everything improved from there, like involved a story of him just like out of money, can't provide for his family, like crying, like head on a steering wheel. And it's just like, man, I feel like I've seen iterations of that story across people I would look at as like, I don't want to say successful. I feel like, cause that's misunderstood, but like living their art and like doing it well and like being very passionate and honest and generous and truthful.
Dude, that's, I need to get to know him. Cause you really reach this place.
You guys would high five.
Yeah, that's awesome. You reach this place where you feel like you're scraping the bottom of who you are and there's nothing there. And I mean, I had read, I'd spent a decade reading leadership books, read books on creativity, artistic endeavors, business books, and like I couldn't read something else that was going to fix me. I didn't need more information. I needed to figure out how to sequence my thought processes. And I stumbled into this. Since then, I've found out it's actually a tactic that's used to help people reorganize their lives. But that idea or that tactic is take what's happening and flesh it out to the nth degree and see that fear really has no teeth. So we're afraid of the things that we shouldn't be afraid of. We're not afraid of the things that we should be concerned about. Yeah. So rightfully, I've got to be concerned about us being evicted. But I'm like, okay, what if that happens? What does that mean about me? Does it mean I suck as a human being, that, you know, all of these things I want to feel about myself? What I didn't realize was I had fallen into a fear, and there's a number of these fears that we work with people that we help them identify. Because if you can figure out your fear with precision, everything flows out of that.
Yeah.
But my fear was my worth as a human being is connected to my performance. So if I perform well, I have more worth. So I was waking up in the morning, I'd have negative points on the scoreboard, but if I killed it, my points went up.
Yeah.
If I didn't kill it, my points went down. So I couldn't be consistently creative. I couldn't solve problems. I couldn't take obstacles and turn them into opportunities because I was locked up. And so it was fleshing that out going, hey, you know what? If we're evicted, I'm still worthy just because I'm a human being, just because I'm alive and breathing right now. And I sat there and I pushed that out to its nth degree and realized who I am is not diminished by what I do or what happens around me.
Mm-hmm.
That everything is a false threat to my identity, who I am. And when you can have a secure core, everything else changes.
Totally. I mean, man, we spoke briefly prior and we were riffing pretty hard about self-awareness and the importance there. And again, to connect it back to Josh, because this is so connected, but he has a little thing called Patterns School of Business and Design, whatever. And one of the exercises that we did out there was like spending maybe 15 minutes writing on Post-it notes our fears. And then after we – like every fear we could think of, right, whether it's small, big, whatever. And then organizing them into three categories. It was like what we could control, what we for sure couldn't control, and what was sort of in the middle. And pretty much all of your biggest fears are like there's this group of fears that you just can't control. And it's like once you almost sort of – not – I don't want to say submit and like – but it is a submission in letting go of that, right? It's like if you can't control it, so like why are you fighting so hard against nothing? You're fighting against like an infinite well of nothing that you can control. You just have to let go of that.
Yeah. Well, in a trippy way, and this is just from working one-on-one with a lot of people and speaking about this, and for in a trippy way, it's almost like the universe designs this obstacle course for you to go through. And that obstacle course is going to expose the muscle imbalance that's there. It's going to be exercises that take you to just this breaking point. And your fear may be different from mine, but what we found is the deepest way to get to it is to realize that fear is connected to who you are. So the most brilliant creatives among us that can consistently create, know how to bring the full unobstructed expression of who they are into what they do over and over and over again. And so to be able to do that, there has to be a solid, secure core. And how do you figure that out? You get to the fear. Awareness of the fear is everything. So for some people, that fear might be, you know, if I don't kill it on these creative projects, I won't have a home among the creative tribe or the creative class. So they're working hard for a client just so that they can belong to a party that they want to break their way into. That work is not going to be able to be consistently creative. They may hit bouts. They may strike gold a few times out of luck. But if they don't realize, hey, it's not about the party that I need to join. It's about the party that I want to build. They're going to constantly foul up bringing that pure expression of who they are. Or maybe their fear is, as I approach my work, I can't be vulnerable or I'll be hurt. And so, and again, all of these relate back to understanding your identity, who you are. Well, at some point in life, they probably were vulnerable and probably hurt. And now they never bring the fullness of who they are to what they do. They always have a few shades back, hidden and diminished.
So, okay, hold on. Like, this is fantastic. Like, absolutely. The question is, though, I mean, the way you're speaking about it, I don't think a lot of people think in these terms. You know, this clearly exists, but I don't know a lot of creatives where even, like, I think I could maybe identify an issue or a thing that I see, but they would never speak in that way. Like, I want to be part of this tribe, or, like, I don't want to be vulnerable, I've been hurt. Like, so how does one identify that, and how do you come to terms with that?
Yeah, I don't want to tell you that because that's secret. No, I'm kidding.
If you go to chrismcallister.com and sign up.
Booyah! No, that's such a beautiful question, and this is what I love doing, and it's for me bringing the unobstructed expression of who I am to my work is helping people with this. So I could freaking talk for like 30 hours and tell way too many stories. But the reality of it is this. It's as simple, but also as deep and as hard to get to as understanding you believe a lie about who you are. That's shame. I don't know if you guys know Brené Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Have you?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Fantastic. Absolutely.
TED Talk. Okay. Vulnerability.
Yeah. So here's what she's done. She's elevated the concept of shame and put it in our vernacular now that somebody like me can fly in the wake of what she's doing and go, look at that. Shame is everything. We've grown up in Western society very shaped by a religious narrative that is guilt obsessed.
Yeah.
I do bad, so I feel bad about what I did. I need to reconcile that some way. And a lot of people are approaching their day like this. I've got to resolve some kind of guilt. When you understand guilt, it's like 2% of the story. Guilt is like the credits that play at the end of the movie. The story is about shame. Guilt's when you feel bad about what you do. Shame's when you feel bad about who you are. And when you feel bad about who you are, here's how it's going to manifest itself in your creativity. You're either going to, in an insecure way, feel bad about who you are, try to prove something, and you're going to power up in your creative expressions, right? Well, let's just talk about what it's like to go into Walmart. Freaking fire the person that's in charge of telling me what's on sale because it accosts my senses. It assaults me. It does violence to me because they're trying to prove something, right? That's why we're all, I think, tracking with a healthier aesthetic when it comes to design and to be in these spaces when you're not slamming that message in front of me trying to prove. But on the flip side, if you feel insecure, if you're suffocating in shame, you're going to hide who you are from your work. You're not going to bring the fullness of who you are. So the quickest way to recognize if you're doing work from an insecure state is because you're trying to prove or hide. You're not just comfortable overflowing who you are. Not only is it your creative work, it's your relationships, right? My wife can say something to me like, hey, we need to paint this wall. And this happened in that time period when I'm hustling every day for groceries. You know, my kids are like, Dad, can we go ride the Ferris wheel? It's like $5. I had a digital picture frame my grandma gave me for Christmas. Tried to go sell it at a pawn shop. I have three kids. It was $15. I could only get $10. So you face these moments and I'm hustling for groceries and I come back in the house and you know, we're just struggling. And my wife's like, hey, we need to get this wall painted. Now, she wasn't saying we need to paint it right away. She was just wanting to know that this was on my radar. It's important to me. But when I'm in an insecure space, when shame is suffocating me, here's what I hear. You suck.
Yeah, you're not doing good enough.
I freaking shouldn't even have to bring this up to you, but because your stuff isn't together, I've got to tell you that this needs to be taken care of. So what am I ready to do? I'm going to do one or two things. I'm going to power up and try to prove who I am. Are you kidding? You know what I'm doing? Or I'm going to hide. I'm going to diminish who I am. I'm going to withdraw, disengage, and pull away. And when you're insecure, shame manifests itself in that. And it applies to relationships. It applies to sexuality. It applies to money. It's everything. So that's why we take it back to identity and shame. That is the wellspring, if you will, that everything's coming out of. And the people that have figured this out, and lots of writers, thousands of years, you've got different people saying it, have learned how to relax their way into their brilliance. Sadly, we still have a culture, specifically in America, hardcore driven on you got to hype your way into being awesome. And that's gross and it doesn't work and pushes people away. So, but that's how you do it. You recognize where you're proving or hiding. You get to that insecurity and it takes time. I mean, I've wrestled with this stuff for years and we help people. We got phrases we use to help them get to the fears of their identity. But what I can tell you is that the time you invest into figuring this out pays dividends in every area of your life.
Frankly, I think at a certain point, business-wise, but that's, I don't think that's the focus. And that's really not even my focus, like if we're thinking about in terms of like actual financials. But I do think – and it's not like I've figured it out, but I have gone through some shit in terms of like trying to figure out who I am, what I believe. – And like, I think actually my reckoning with religion was a very early, like a high school sort of impetus. And then I think even like during college, a lot of it was even just like sexuality, like you're mentioning, like things like that, where I started to realize, oh my God, I have so much built up shame about these things that are like natural and okay. And it's like, that is, it's a cultural thing. Man,
dude,
you were just real on point there, Chris.
Oh, thanks, man.
Hey, Vinny, you still alive?
I am alive and kicking. I'm just drinking it in over here.
Yeah.
This is a great combo that's going down very natural winding paths.
It wouldn't be 10,000 hours if we didn't acknowledge specifically a segue or a good conversation.
You know, absolutely. For me, there's a lot of people that they try to figure out how to define who we are. And just to riff on what you're saying about like this idea of shame and sexuality, how it applies to everything. When you think about like what is the self? Well, I mean, we don't know how to define this. Mm-hmm. It's mysterious. It's nebulous. The best stab that I take at it is, so it's our brain, neurology, our mind, our psychology, because those are different, and then our body, our physiology. So if you draw like a Venn diagram of those three circles where they all three overlap, that's who you are. It's your mind, your body, and your brain, and how those overlap. And here's the thing about shame. Shame is stored. It gets stored in your body somehow. I mean, most of our gut is in our stomach. Memories get stored in our body. All this stuff is so trippy. Mm-hmm. So much so that if Vince, when you walked into – so what's it like when you wake up in the morning and you go to work? Tell me what that looks like.
What, like you mean physically? Because
you're free – well, you're freelancing. I know you have your studio, but do you go into any kind of workspace with others?
I freelance. My studio is my home, but I work a 9-to-5. I work as a copywriter for an ad agency here in Minneapolis.
Okay, perfect. So you're going into work in the morning. And when you come up to the door, you step into the door, let's say that you've got some kind of staff meeting, you make your way down the hall, you turn into the staff meeting, and your team is there, and they're ready. They have water balloons, and man, they just pelt you. Like stinging throws, hardcore. What's it like when you walk in, let's say that you're unhealthy and keep repeating the actions that bring you harm, and you go into that staff meeting the next day, how are you walking through the door?
You know, I mean, this theoretical proposition, probably I've got some sort of umbrella or shielding my face with my arms.
That's exactly it. Yeah, changing, you're walking right? In got timid, it. Sheepish, exactly. Now, the next day, let's say that that didn't happen. The next day you're going in and it's drinks, it's cake, it's ice cream, it's everything, whatever your favorite is. And they're like, Vince, we're so glad you're here. Our team isn't complete without you. Everything that you need, we want to take care of. Even if you don't work, just you being here makes us better. Yeah.
That sounds pretty nice. Yeah, sounds pretty good.
Dude. So here's what your body is going to do, and your brain is going to do this, and your mind is going to do this. It's going to organize around its most powerful experiences. Mm-hmm. You can't help but do that. So all of us are approaching every day around the most powerful experiences we've had and the thousand little experiences. And so what we work with people doing is how to deconstruct that and then rebuild experiences so that they can trigger those states where you're actually positioning yourself to go, I am here, I feel no shame, I'm fully engaged, and I'm going for it. Does it mean it's going to work out? No, but the difference is when you don't feel shame, you don't need it to work out. You sure. All right, can this is, fail. Go ahead.
We're hitting on a lot of like great high-level philosophical points, and it's orbiting around this sort of conversation about confidence and comfort and kind of being at peace with your inner self and with the work that you do. I would like to, if we can, maybe get a little more granular. And when you talk about kind of clearing a path in your mind, relaxing and allowing success to happen, do you have any, maybe on a personal level, exercises, mental, emotional, spiritual, or otherwise, or just practices or processes in your life that allow this to be possible? Because it's not necessarily a natural way of thinking, right? People don't always just stumble into it.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those things where typically you're not going to drift into the best ideas or the deepest awareness about yourself It's going to come from being.
Yeah,
it's going to come from being with yourself. And so there's a trippy way to talk about this and a simple way to talk about this, and both are necessary.
Let's go trippy.
Let's go trippy. Dude, I love it. I'm going to fly my freak flag and lose everybody.
We're talking feng shui. Take the wrapper off the pack.
Chris, I've got a feeling if anybody is still with us, they are not going to be turned off by you flying a freak flag.
Yeah, let's go.
Well, let's go for it then. Okay, so let's think about Einstein theory of relativity. I had to read a deep, thick book to even get this one statement I'm going to make. But he turns on headlight. Let's imagine, if you turn on headlights and you're driving down the road, the idea would be the speed of light plus, let's say the car is going 50 miles an hour. The speed of light plus 50 miles an hour is how fast the light's coming out of those headlights. Einstein has the guts to say, the way that you've been thinking about gravity is wrong. Gravity bends so that the speed of light stays constant, regardless of how fast the car is going. He used different thought experiments that I can't even explain. But he wrote himself a giant permission slip that said, I don't have to think like everybody else. And if it wasn't for him, we can't put satellites in space. So Newton, we need him to build a bridge. We need Einstein to fly to put things in orbit. So Stephen Hawking comes along, and I love this. And this is, you guys know Stephen Hawking, the
theory of everything.
Deep dude.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Sorry.
I can't help now when I say his name to picture Benedict Cumber?
No. Right? Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, no, that was
Cumberbatch
a different
was
one.
Alan Turing, which we should show notes. Dude, that movie was fantastic. Oh, my God. What an incredible story.
Two really good biopics. Yeah,
amazing, right? Couple of
Englishmen. I've got to watch that movie. So Stephen Hawking comes along, and I had listened to something by Pete Holmes, and that's popping in my head, too, now about Stephen Hawking.
He had
a comedian on there, and oh, my gosh. But so Stephen Hawking said, every breakthrough we've had, you know, if you think about it this way, in theoretical physics that's helped us understand the nature of the universe has been because we've imagined it. Mm-hmm. So here's the quote from Stephen Hawking, that in a sense, imaginary time is just as real as time. Mm-hmm. When you give yourself permission to check out of the space-time continuum as we know it and tap into your imagination, that's just as real as time. So the first way, and this is the trippy way, fly the freak flag, it's your imagination. So if I'm in a space where, you know, I need more money than I have, I need more time than I have, I need more energy than I have, so I've got to figure out how to get creative with my resources. I've got to figure out how to pivot out of this moment of scarcity into abundance. It's internally knowing I already have abundance. And your brain can't tell the difference between you picturing yourself on the beach scene and you being at the beach.
Yeah.
So learn how to see, feel, and hear it and open that up. So we work with people doing that. Now, you could do it so much that you could lose your fire to go after your mission or to build the party you want to be a part of. And that's definitely the danger of tasting any of your subconscious. I mean, Carl Jung talks about, you know, you can only handle it by the cupful. Yeah. The trippy way of doing this, there you go. My personality, I'll be like
Jung's work, you know, he's doing okay.
If a cup is working, my personality would definitely be like, I'm going to do at least a bucket.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that. Right. I'm going to douse myself and see what happens.
I mean, that is our nature. I do actually think, like, I know we're sidetracking, but that is like, I think that really trips a lot of people out, like in terms of like addiction to anything. And I mean, there's all sorts of addictions we can talk about, but just like even with creative work, I think getting addicted to a specific response, whether that's, you know, views or social media or whatever, it can really derail, I think, your long-term creative success in whatever medium or mediums you're working in.
Dude, that's huge. Well, so what we say about addiction is this, it's a way to quiet the pain of shame. Hmm. If you stop the addiction, the shame will scream, and then you can figure out what you're really dealing with. And it doesn't freaking matter. I mean, like you're saying, anything can be addictive. So I realized for myself, my 20s, I was addicted to adrenaline. I did not know how to deal with its absence. And I went through about a year and a half of just no positive wins, no adrenaline. And I remember the first time I felt it, and I was headed home. We had just done a major deal and got ourselves out of some nasty holes. And I remember feeling it coursing through my veins going, oh, man, Chris, you better be careful, because when you go home, you're going to be so amped up, you're going to power your way through and not be gracious and sensitive. Because, you know, as a dad with three daughters, they don't need me bowling them over with my personality. And so, yeah, this addiction's huge. But so not only imagination, that's the freak flag. The simple way that is a little more concrete, it's layering stimuli to relax you now. So let's talk about it. I lived in Arkansas for about 7 years. And when my dad told me we were moving to Arkansas, I was in ninth grade. I said, do they have shoes? And do they have cable? All I thought about Arkansas was what I heard in the news. And they had one and not the other. I'll let you figure out which one. No. So I'm in high school, and we go to Arkansas. And it was behind, weirdly enough, from – like what I had experienced, and that was a weird thing and a whole separate deal. But it's not a very structured state, so there are actually rivers there that have class wider whitewater rapids that you can canoe. You can freaking canoe. Right. And it's the stupidest, most insane thing that you can do this. But I love river canoeing, and I love being on the river all day. And so I would go just canoe all day. It was so amazing. And I would get in the car, and this is how I stumbled into it. And I started building a music trigger so that I'd have the windows down, the wind's blowing, and I'm like, oh, this is so amazing. I've been on the river all day. I feel so relaxed. I'm going to listen to this song. And I experimented doing that every time I was on the river all day. Well, I built a trigger with that song, so now that I could hear a few chords from the bridge, and I totally relaxed. So if you were to have somebody that was stuck creatively, they need to find a physical activity they love that shuts down the insecurity of their identity,
you're
frontal cortex.
I'm not to cut you off. Okay, and then
no, go ahead. Tell me how. I love
it. So two things. One, I was just thinking, you know, especially when we're thinking about creative feng shui, like I think of, okay, what is the state of creativity? What is the zone I put myself in? And hearing you, you know, talk through events, like, okay, what, where do you go? You know, and like for me, it is my studio. And it is my place, and especially the last like almost 3 years now, I've been solo or like working maybe with like other collaborators, freelancers, and so like I've very much had to think about that and had to refine and figure that out. Like how do I get productive? How do I get excited? How do I stay productive without crashing? You know what I mean? How do I not overdo that? And like something I realized for sure was, when I wake up, I love podcasts, but if I listen to, I love podcasts, but if I listen to podcasts when I wake up, like that's kind of bad news for my productivity or for my like flow state of the day. Like I should start with music, and music is what really gets me going. And what I was thinking about there was, I oftentimes will just go onto playlists or a mix or something over and over because it's like familiar and it almost like keeps me present. It fades into the background, but then also keeps me present. I find it's very effective, like for getting into a flow state and like just like jamming. Like I love it. The other thing I was thinking about was, we're talking about physical state and how that functions with our being. One practice that has like totally like changed my world was yoga, like in terms of getting more in touch with my body, which is something I very much like. I'm fine, like my body's fine, but like, I have neglected it, you know, the past like couple years, just in terms like I'm in fine shape, but it was more about just like being in touch with it. And especially when I started getting into yoga, I realized like how I was holding myself in the same way that Vince would come in guarded, you know, day two from getting hit with water balloons.
Hitting agency.
Same with me in general, with like my physical state in relation to the work I was doing. And I feel like that kind of, pervaded a lot of the other, like even just my attitude. And so like doing that, I felt has given me much better self-awareness and like much more attuned to everything that's going on with me.
Dude, that's so free. Awareness is everything. Like that's the greatest gift you can have. The greatest gift you can give to yourself is just to be aware. And for me, it started when I took my daughter out for a birthday. She's like 3 years old. And I started to want to ask her questions, one of my kids, and I'm like, I became aware of the questions that were going through my mind. Like, isn't your daddy awesome that he took off work to hang out with you? He's like freaking crap. Lightning strikes my brain, and I become aware of this narcissistic theme, this strand in me that wants to take this little 3-year-old girl and make her responsible for the existential needs of my identity. Can you hang with that 3-year-old girl? Get on my level. So I'm like, for the realist, I can't do this. And so I remember sitting there, and it was like something flipped in me. It was a switch. And I just said, how are you? What do you want to do? And I made it all about her. I'm not there yet. I screwed up this week and told my daughter what you just said made me feel like shit. And it hurt her. And I said, you know what? I just made you responsible for how I feel. Yeah. Bad on me. And secondly, I brought you into the emotional intensity of what I was feeling rather than protect you from some of that. And I'm sorry for that. But what I can do now, because I know how to recognize when I lose center, when I lose that secure core, mm-hmm. is how to get back to it, how to repair that tear, how to you know, bring up a conversation maybe I don't want to have with an associate, how to analyze something that didn't connect like I thought it did, because when I was writing it, I wasn't in a space that was clear. I was in a space of proving or hiding. And what helps you learn that is to go to that imaginary space or to create that physical stimuli so you learn what relaxed in who you are feels like. Very few people Yes. will you ever come across that have nothing to prove or hide. But that's the baseline. And when you learn that baseline and when you learn what that feels like, everything else that isn't that, you wake up, you become aware, and it feels off. And so for the physical stimuli, sometimes it's just stacking things, finding a physical activity, finding music, and finding nutrition. Because again, this idea that neurology, physiology, psychology, stacking all that together to create moments where truly we can be in the craziness of life, everything's flying apart, and we still return back to center. So I heard this weekend, a friend of mine was telling me that over Memorial Day, her daughter got bit by a dog. And it just so happened, the house they were at, he was a doctor, so he could do the stitches. And he did the stitches. While he was doing the stitches, took a break, went and flipped the burgers on his grill, came back and finished the stitches.
Yes.
Now, I could never do that. I was like, burn the burgers. Who freaking cares? I got to take care of this girl. Yeah. But he's been there so many times mm-hmm. that he knew that terrain. And the most traveled terrain we should know is that state where we have nothing to prove, nothing to, I don't know why this popped in my head, but it's the end of 8 Mile with Eminem when he's doing the rap battle.
Well, we're getting a little hip hop on you. Like,
dude,
I think that's what's bringing it out, but okay, go on. Right.
I got that in me. Yeah. But so he's like, you know, you think you're going to call me out for being this? I'll call myself out first. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to hide. Yeah, you're right. You're right about me.
Yeah. He disarms them. It's like pretty cool.
That's it.
When you were saying this, what, one thing that has revealed first of all, it's like a lot of what we're talking about is just your position or your posture to the world, and it's like a lot of it is like a lot of us are just flexed, we're tense, and nothing good but the really good stuff comes from a relaxed state, right? It comes from an open state, and even just athletically. But something that has very much revealed my own like vanity, insecurity, desire to whatever has just been podcasting, because especially like, you know, the first 20 episodes, the first 30 episodes, like I started to see different shades of like me screaming, you know, like me needing to interject. And I think it has taught me and it continues to teach me patience. Especially because oftentimes when we're talking, as I am right now, it's sort of selfish. And I feel like I've tried to, and I continue to try to speak when I have something that I think adds value or that can create value, instead of speaking when it creates value only for me, in terms of like me feeling better about myself because I can hear my own voice.
Dude, that's such great insight. Well, and to say nobody I know of has the ability to learn what that baseline feels like than the creative class. Now before I explain that, let me just say some things can come, like you said, good things can come from a flexed state. It's not consistently creative, though. You can do some things because you're pissed off at the world. You can do some things because you're angry. You can do some things because you got something to prove. You can create that way. You cannot be consistently creative. And you won't make great decisions about how to nurture the momentum of this moment into the next. How to pivot out of this moment into the next. Every time I say pivot, my wife reminds me of that Ross clip where from Friends. They're moving the couch. He's like, pivot! Pivot! So I can't say that word and be serious. But here's the thing. Here's the reason why for creatives, they're so fun to work with. And I feel the same way because I'm in that same work. You put yourself out there all the time. Yeah. So today I sent an email to everybody I have an email for. I usually do that on Tuesdays. That may change. It's what I do right now. I send the email at 9 a.m. At 9:12 a.m., I'm like, freaking losers. Email me back and tell me how amazing that was. I put myself out there, and I want to know it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing something, and this is what's key. And it sounds cheesy, but I hate cliches. But you're doing something when it's from a secure core. You want to give people a gift.
Yeah.
Even if you don't get something from it, it's okay. When it's insecure, the gift is polluted because you're saying, I'm going to do this for you, but I want to get something from it. Just like I was doing with my daughter that day for her birthday. I'm like, I'm here giving you time and energy, but I need you to affirm me in some way, whatever you can do, 3-year-old. And that neediness will keep you from building that party that you want to be a part of. Or as Kevin Kelly says, you know, those 1,000 true fans or that tribe.
Get a K. Get a K, you'll be okay.
Boom.
As Dave Kelly says. So I unfortunately have a couple of quick things to bring up. One is we're talking a lot about temporary states and we're talking about environments, and that is going to come up in a second. But more viscerally, do I perchance hear the faint background of running water?
It sounded like a waterfall.
So part of what's in my state is it's a massage area with a giant waterfall.
Stop.
I have
unbelievable.
A stream flowing underneath my house. Dude, you know what that is? So my basement is really sexy. My stand-up office is in the corner up against a concrete wall, and I bet that's the AC cutting on.
Well, it's no problem, obviously.
That was visible. that was well described. I was curious, but...
It was me, hopefully, pairing a natural segue and natural as in nature because...
Ah, you son of a...
Every week, we like to keep ourselves creative by taking a little bit of a stroll, a wandering away from the topic at hand to talk about something off topic. And it's particularly appropriate today, in Minneapolis at least, because it's been downpouring all day. And what we're talking about today is rainy days and the effect that they have on us. What are your rainy day rituals?
Can you clarify? Is it D-A-Y-S or is it D-A-Z-E? Or is it both?
It's rainy days, D-A-Z-E, as if it were some, you know, old school comedy from the 80s, rainy days.
Great.
So here's what's trippy for me is it's easier to write when it's rainy than when it's sunny. And so I grew up in the South. I took the sunny days for granted. I live in Columbus, Ohio. And when it's sunny, it's like I freaking have to be doing work that demands all of me in a way that I'm engaged with people or I want to be outside. So I want to be speaking or walking people through our coaching program. And so writing is a lot harder for me when it's sunnier. I actually just found an app, Haven, I think is what it's called. It creates like this feeling like it's raining. With what's on your screen.
Oh, really?
We'll show notes that. We'll also show notes Noisily, N-O-I-S-I-L-I, another fantastic. Well, it's not on the screen. It's just like sound, but I love it.
Well, this creates for me like this feeling like, oh, it is a rainy day.
You have to put it in an Oculus Rift though, yeah?
That would be awesome. That's like, I feel it on my skin. I actually pay my kids to spray me with water, and it just triggers.
Yeah, there it is. And I'm sure you get all like around all sorts of child labor laws or whatever. That's a good move.
But I, so for me, when it's rainy, it's actually easier for me to go in and create and put that to words or create a program or think through like really deep stuff. Because when it's sunny, I'm like, let's go play in the water.
Yeah,
the end of 8 Mile, where they play.
Yes,
I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. To me, it's always like, it feels right being inside when it's raining. It feels like I'm in the correct place. I'm fit a piece of the puzzle together. And so that allows me just to be more focused. At the same time, I think I'm kind of in my element when it's raining. I like kind of a, I think I'm a lighthearted individual in my day-to-day life, but I kind of like that sort of smoldering kind of dark and like brooding atmosphere that a rainy day like creates. And I just find myself being more productive on those days.
Totally. Dude, that's me too.
Two thoughts. One was like, well, cause mostly I'm mostly read at night, like not exclusively, but like a lot, like if I'm actually going to be writing, and I kind of haven't been writing for a while, but I've totally come to terms with like the ebb and flow of that, which is cool. But I feel like rainy days kind of remind me of, and this is a bit of a cop-out, but it reminds me of like just sick days in that like the only time, like some of my favorite almost like watershed like cinematic moments where I'm like, oh God, this movie makes me want to like make movies or this like thing has totally inspired me, it usually come when I'm sick because I'm in a position where I'm forced, not forced, but I've given myself permission to just like not do anything. And mm-hmm. just consume some sort of entertainment content. And so usually I watch like the movies I watch that I really love are like when I'm super sick. Oh, but I also find there's a correlation between that and it being crappy out. Because if I may, I am the one who controls the weather. And if you'll notice, when it's raining out is when I come and write things on your walls.
Wow, that's a next level reference to something that I don't even think,
and I'm not sure if it'll make it the episode
in the show.
In the episode.
That was laser. That was a pull.
That was a reference. Is one
going all the way. I love that.
Comprehended by anyone listening.
I love that. I love that.
What a great power play.
So that's a nice succinct little off topic because I want more time to dive back in.
Yeah.
On something we call last thoughts. And that's where we kind of wrap the discussion through the guise of two questions. Good. So Chris, if you've already been so kind and generous, but if you could just find it in your heart to give a couple of more weigh-ins.
I think he's been like a seven out of 10.
Can we ramp that up all the way to 10?
Yeah, just
I'm
going to
ask
on,
you
man.
Two questions. First, how can our listeners support you? It's your chance to be a little more selfish. Two, if you would like our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, viewed through the lens of creative feng shui, what would you want that to be?
Sorry, that makes me giggle. And also, Chris, you better not cop out and be like, say something that is seemingly generous, but is actually self-serving with how our listeners can support you.
Because not a lot.
I'm on your game, man.
Yeah, it's so hard to do that. I'll hit the second one and then I can be clear on the first one. But the second one would be this. Who you are, this would be for the listeners, isn't defined by what you do, what you want to do, what you've done, what you're embarrassed about. Who you are isn't defined by your portfolio, by the clients you hope to get, by the ones you have now. It's not defined by the relationships that you want, by the relationships you have now. When you learn that who you are is a separate entity in reality, that you're not responsible for anybody else's behavior, you're not responsible for their perception of you, you're just worthy because you're alive, you're breathing. Like if you could walk away with that, that changes everything. Everything flows out of that. So that's something we work with people on, that they're able to say, who I am is not defined by what I do or my relationships. And to just sit with that and think about who you are, the gift of who you are. You may have never been celebrated before, but I mean, how crappy would it be if when we brought our kids home, if I leaned over the crib and they're 2 months old and I'm like, come on, are you kidding me? For 2 months, we've been feeding you and clothing you and giving you shelter. You freaking spit up on the carpet and you're ruining it. You smell. You're costing us a fortune in diapers. We got to buy new crap for you all the time. You outgrow everything. It's time to start paying rent. You need to start delivering or you're out. Okay? You're going to be out. No, you just celebrate them for who they are. And here's the thing. None of us got that perfectly, and that's okay. We don't have to sit around and cry about it, but we can understand this. We can give that gift to ourselves. And as trippy and as I'll fly my freak flag, deep and introspective as that is, mm-hmm. when you don't use shame to motivate yourself, you're truly free. Yeah. And then you will not give in to the shame of others when they're trying to force you. I mean, from personality testing for corporate careers to credit scores to standardized testing in schools, the message is constantly, we're going to tell you how it needs to be done. Just to write yourself a giant permission slip that says, I get to be me and I get to do it in a way that has never been done before. And I will not shame myself or respond to the shame of others.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm like doing the slam poet snap.
I'm just nodding
dude,
sagely.
You're so on point. It's I think especially for performers, like people who consider themselves like high performing, I think there is so much shame embedded in that, and it feels like, and I have found myself even like judging and then like reverse judging myself, like wait, why? But it's like, you see performance as and results as value, as quantifiable worthiness. And what I think about your perspective on this, it's kind of got a poker element to it, in that like if I'm playing poker, I can only play the best odds. And in especially if you feel like you're playing the best game you can within, you know, your constraints, you can't honestly be held responsible. Like, you can be held responsible within reason, like mathematically, but like you are doing your best, like you're playing the hand the best you can, and you have to take risks, and sometimes they don't work out, and that's the reality of it. But it's like, as long as you're playing a good game, it's like it's still fun even when you lose.
That's right. Hey, that's what makes it fun. So for the way that we talk about it is resiliency is when you know who you are is separate from what you do. So you're not crushed by the loss and you're not so euphoric from it that you lose perspective.
Dude, totally right. Mm-hmm.
Your only responsibility is to be the best version of yourself. Constantly work on that and bring that to what you do. That's it. Work. You can't control everything else. So most of the world is running around by fear and shame. The second thing would probably be for people maybe to check out the podcast. They could go to the URL for my site. I'm sure it'll be in the show notes. Is chrismcallister.com.
We'll also put in the show notes, which is
show notes.
Small little channel of water we put right around the show, right around the episode page. And occasionally we'll put a link or two in there to just click in the waves if you could.
I have to tell you that I only have about 20% left of a Weyerbacher Mary Monk's Belgian style triple ale. So we'll blame that on the show motes. Nice. So chrismcallister.com, I always say one of each letter. It's easier to remember that way. Yep. And, but yeah, so there's a podcast links there and, you know, the conversation I'm having. We're not to the point yet that we've even figured out the best way to have this conversation at scale. The feedback we get is that whether it's speaking or working one-on-one, you know, it's like, oh, it's so much better with you. So in other words, people don't get that same feeling from a book or a podcast with me. And that's why I point them at least to that so they could connect with the voice and see what happens from there.
Totally, man. I mean, go check it out.
Yes.
I feel like if you were listening to this right now, it'd be silly for you not to.
At least, yeah.
I'm not even pitching you. I think it's
got you know what? I'll also plug your Twitter. You should go follow you on Twitter. I was reading your feed today, and you had a lot of cool, inspiring, insightful stuff. So, at Chris McAllister, am I right?
Oh, dude, thanks, man. Yeah, that's it. It's that simple. I think I feel a little sad about Twitter because my kids now are 12. I got to think about it. No, excuse me. Yeah, 12, 11, and 9. And that's probably wrong, too. It's freaking happening too fast. Come on. Point of it is I suck so bad in some areas of life. No.
Hey, that's shame, Chris.
Avoid the shame, man.
Laser. That was brilliant. But you know what's happening is it's summertime now for them, it's transitioning into that. So they get to stay up later. So it's like work for me. And then with them, there's no late night work hours. Yeah. And not as able to do as much on Twitter, but definitely love connecting there.
No worries. Cool. I mean, I find it even like I kind of got over the idea of like producing content that, you know, I mean, not in a bad way, but it's just like I produce enough content other places or whatever. But I find it like one of the best ways to connect with people whose work I'm really inspired by, or like people even I want to collaborate with. I find it's a great like lightweight way to connect with someone. You know, they're like, like an email kind of has a lot of weight to it. Whereas like a tweet, it's like, oh, you can ignore me and that's okay. An email, it's like, okay, you know, so I'm just saying, like, I feel like it's a good way to, and a lightweight way to interact. I know, I don't think he kept it, but Barrett Brooks, friend of the show, who I think I might've mentioned to you during when we talked, did I?
If not, I don't remember
I think I did. I was
you
like,
probably did.
You should check him out. He's odd. Like you'd love his stuff. He's part of Fizzle.
Yes, I remember that now. Yeah.
But he, for a while, had like an autoresponder on his email that was like, "Hey, if you want to connect, get at me on Twitter." Like, I'm not emailing. But he emails now.
Yeah.
But it was a good experiment because it's like he can like very quickly distill, you know, like, okay, well, what do you actually want? Because I feel like 140 characters limits people in a nice way when they have an ask, which is what most people emailing have.
Dude, that's so true.
We're going to show notes your email. Everybody email Chris, whatever you want. Ask him for.
Great. But you know what? I will
long
say,
narratives that require lots of buried questions.
Yeah. Dude, that's a whole nother show topic. We should do, honestly, I would love to talk for like an hour or two about just intros. Yes. It's a big deal, man. It's a big deal.
It is.
Absolutely. But here we have an outro, and in that, it is a thank you so much, Chris,
classic
for your time, your generosity, and you know your musings on what turned out to be an extremely stimulating conversation. We do have one more request for you, though.
Yeah.
And that is to sign us out in the customary 10,000 hours way. Last couple weeks, I've really butchered giving this instruction.
I was going to say, like, it hasn't gone well.
It's gone really poorly, not by the fault of our guests, but by my own fault. So I will say, we say the words "ship it" as kind of an announcement of our personal motto. If it doesn't ship, it isn't art. Get stuff done. Don't tread water. So if you would be so kind as just to say a rousing "ship it," and that'll sign us out.
Ship it.